My name is Kirsty Rayner, and I am obsessed with all things mindset, meditation, business, and helping you to overcome those mindset blocks and magical breakthroughs in every season of life. I'm a multiple business owner, accredited transformational and mindset coach, Vedic meditation teacher, a yogi with 10 years marketing experience on paper, but informally, I'm obsessed with growth, a pale rosé wine lover, chocoholic, and your new bestie. We get into all the secrets and hacks to get you in an abundant mindset. So go and grab a coffee, get cozy, get comfortable. This is the Mindset and Me podcast. This week on the Mindset and Me podcast, I am graced with the pleasure of the amazing Simon Alexander Ong. He is a personal development entrepreneur, coach, and public speaker. His clients are from all walks of life, but they share one trait, which we all love on this podcast, and they believe that the greatest investment you can make is in yourself. His insights have seen him featured in Huffington Post, Forbes, Virgin, and The Guardian. I mean, to name a few here, Simon. He also regularly speaks at organizations and keynotes. He just came from the most incredible keynote today, which we will touch on, I'm sure. And so excitingly, his first book is going to be published on the 21st of April. He's also received endorsements from the likes of just some small names, Simon Sinek and Marie Forleo. So welcome to the podcast, Simon. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Kirsty, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh my goodness, it's my pleasure. I mean, we've really seen the highlight there from the intro. I'm like, wow, the more research I did on Simon, I was just like flabbergasted. Like, tell me all your secrets. So I guess kind of starting at the beginning and, you know, what's the journey that you've taken to get to where you are today?
Sure. So Kirsty, when I talk about how I grew up, a lot of people can't believe that I was a shy, introverted young boy when they look at the sort of work that I now do today. But that's who I was when I was young. I was one of two sons to Malaysian Chinese parents who had immigrated to the United Kingdom in pursuit of a better life. And we grew up with my brother and I grew up with the mistaken belief that success was defined by our job title. We had this pressure both within the family, but also within society to follow the path of being a banker, a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant. And so I worked hard to be top of my class, get good grades, very stereotypically Chinese, if you will, in terms of being the clever one. And that helped me to land a position at London School of Economics as a student studying economics, which was a huge coup. You know, I was the only one from my secondary school to make it to that university. And my parents and my wider family were so proud. And then upon graduation, I decided to start my career in the world of finance at what was probably the worst possible time, Kirsty. This was the middle of 2007, a year before the financial crisis, and with a company called Lehman Brothers, which collapsed into bankruptcy in September 2008. So talk about a volatile start to your career. This was as volatile as it could get. And so while at the time, I'm not going to lie, I mean, it was painful. And scary, you know, those hopes and your dreams. You spend all this money to get this degree, to start in this incredible industry, which you thought that you were going to make a name for yourself for and earn a lot of money in. And suddenly to take that, to see that be taken away from you was just really painful at the moment. And it's something that you only appreciate with age and wisdom. But looking back, Kirsty, it was a blessing in disguise because it kickstarted for me the longest journey that we humans make, the inches from our heads to our hearts. Never an easy one, but the most important and fulfilling that we will ever embark on. And so it led me to reflect on three questions. First, what did success mean to me? I realized that many of us are so exhausted, not because we're doing too much, but because we're running someone else's race. We are measuring our progress against other people's definitions. Second, what did fulfillment look like to me? And third, what sort of impact did I want to have in the world? Because for me, I started to see that our value was determined by how much more we have given to the world than we have taken from it. And so as I embarked on this journey, following my curiosities, that led me to what I now get to do today, which is to coach those in leadership positions, everyone from Michelin star chefs to TV presenters to C-level executive to startup entrepreneurs, to have the opportunity to speak in front of organizations across the planet and public conferences. And more recently, as you kindly mentioned in the introduction, Kirsty, getting a book deal with the world's largest publishing house, Penguin, to share my thoughts and insights in my very first book.
It's just so exciting. And it's really, really an inspirational story that despite the rocky start, should we say, you kind of maybe found your path. I mean, it's been interesting. Do you think it was actually because that kind of all came to such an abrupt ending that it really set you back on your right path?
Definitely. And one thing to caveat is that I didn't start on the journey of coaching and speaking straight away. And it's one thing I often touch on a lot is that I didn't know as a result of what happened, what my purpose was. And I think it's very rare that people wake up one morning and go, I know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. This is my calling. This is why I was born.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's what stops many of us. We don't start because we're waiting for a sign. We're waiting to know what our purpose is. But the irony is we don't find our purpose unless we follow our curiosities. And so because of the crisis, I became curious about the world of entrepreneurship. I said to myself, if I continue to work for a company, a lot of my destiny would be out of my hands. How much I got paid, whether I got promoted, what bonus I would get. Whereas if I started to focus on running my own business, whatever that was, I didn't know at the time. But as long as I focused on what I could control, then a lot more things would be in my control. And so my curiosity led me, first of all, Kirsty, to enter the world of multi-level marketing, otherwise known as MLM.
Yeah.
That, as we know now, didn't work out because it wasn't what I was passionate about. But yeah. I was pursuing the get-rich-quick schemes. Mm-hmm. I was seduced by the sort of money that you could earn. Mm-hmm. And then I went into the world of food. So I was connecting private chefs with people who wanted to try cuisines, but also network and providing a platform for doing so. Unfortunately, the margins were wafer thin and it wasn't a business that I could scale. And then after that, my curiosity led me to the world of coaching. And as soon as I started to understand the power and the transformative effect that this skill could have on the lives of others, I was hooked. I was hooked and I just wanted to see how far I could go with it. And that's really where the journey began when I look at the personal development entrepreneur that is what I've been on.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. I would say you are, I mean, obviously we say, you know, we're entrepreneurial in spirit, but I genuinely would say you are a complete entrepreneur because you've found these like elements and these nuggets and you've taken it from, you know, different industries and applied it in a different way and then found your calling. But even the way you talk about your work, I can tell you've worked in marketing. I can tell you've studied economics. Like there's so much within it that's made it like multifaceted, which I think is totally unique.
Definitely. And you know, just when you touch on the word unique, I think all of us actually have a unique way of seeing the world. And it's really about tapping into those experiences and skills that make us different. You know, the big trap we fall into that I didn't want to fall into was just doing what everyone else was doing.
Yeah.
And so I remember, Kirsty, when I went to my very first Tony Robbins event, and I was sitting at one of the seats in the front area, and most of the people in the audience were just there to consume the content. So they were there writing notes and taking down all the things that Tony was covering. Now, for me, I really knew most of that because I've watched a lot of his videos. I've been on other courses that he had done. For me, though, I wanted to tap into something that made me unique. I was always fascinated about structure and the mechanics of how people did what they do. So while everybody was writing notes about the content, I was writing down answers to questions such as, how did he start that talk? How did he finish the talk? How many stories did he tell?
What?
How did he tell them? And when did he come into the audience? So I really wanted to break down and codify how success was being done.
Wow, that's incredible. That's so powerful, isn't it, to be able to take away and like work out what is Tony Robbins' process. I've got it. Thank you very much. I think actually something on that as well, I learned when I did, like, I worked in media too before, so I'm really, really used to pitching and talking, and I'm Northern and I just talk a lot anyway, is to start something in the middle. Start with the middle of a story when you open up a conversation, and it gets people hooked, doesn't it? Because everyone is curious. All you need to do is find a way to pique that curiosity.
Definitely. I love that, Kirsty. And that's something I do in a lot of my keynotes. And when we talk about looking at various stimuli and trying to dissect how they do what they do and bring it into your own industry, the way I learned that technique, Kirsty, was actually by watching a lot of films. I love my films. I love going to the cinema. And I noticed that in some of the best films that gross the highest revenue, what they do is they all follow a set formula. And in those films, they drop in the middle of the action. Like if you go to the cinema and watch the James Bond film, you will note that at the beginning, they drop into an action scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you don't know what's going on. And then suddenly the theme tune comes on and then they rewind back to fill in the gap. So you kind of know why that first scene happened.
Yeah.
And so I thought to myself, well, imagine I could do that with my talk. To drop them in the action and then bring it back to the theme just so I can get their attention at the beginning.
Oh my goodness. I never really realized that until you said that. Actually, I'm going to watch everyone now and look out for that. I guess as well, it's really, I'm always curious to know about, you know, incredible coaches, entrepreneurs, you know, people who are really succeeding in business, which you have, but also in such a lovely way as well, such a kind, you know, way. You're very, very giving. Mm. We've been connected for a while, I think a few years actually on Instagram, haven't we? And so, you know, it is rare to have that. So I guess, you know, what's the journey been like to shape you to be the way that you are now and how you are in business?
Definitely. Actually, when I was at the beginning of my journey, Kirsty, there was one book in particular I read, and I read a lot of books, but there was one in particular that had a profound influence on the way I do business. And it's a book written by Bob Berg and John David Mann. They are the co-authors, and they wrote a book called The Go-Giver. And it's gone on to become a best-selling book. Bob has become an incredible mentor to me. But it was a book that I continue to reread at least once every year. And it shaped the way I was thinking about business. And here was a book that focused on the fact that giving is the secret to success. And it aligned with something another mentor told me when I was just starting as a coach, which is every week, look for ways to do two things. Serve and create. Serve and create. Now, if you are finding ways to serve and create every single week, you will not only get all the business you want, but you will, in your own small way, add value to the world. Mm-hmm. Now, serving can be something as simple as adding value to someone's life today, whether that's sending them an article that you know they would benefit from reading from, gifting them a book, or introducing them to a friend, and you know that that relationship could flourish. Mm. Creation could be, well, what content can I create to add value to people who follow me? Now, if you're always thinking from this perspective of serving on one hand and creating on the other, then in no time, you're going to be building a community that loves what you do, a community that feels the impact that you are having on the world. And that's how we contribute to a legacy and a story that we can be proud of.
I was just going to say that it's all about legacy, isn't it? And I've been really, really honing in on that recently as to what I want it to be, which is part of the podcast, actually, the beauty of the podcast, because it's evergreen, right? It's always going to be here. So that is part of my legacy and the message that I want to share. So I think it's so important.
Mm. And just connected to legacy, Kirsty, a question that I always ask myself and I challenge my clients to also ask themselves on a regular basis is how do I want to be remembered?
Yeah, it's so big.
How do I want to be remembered? Because when we reflect on that question, it literally reminds us what is most important. Mm. Eliminates all the trivial and it focuses our energy on what is most important. Mm. Because that is what people will be talking about. They're not going to be talking about how much money you earned, what brand you worked for, how quickly you got promoted. They're going to be focusing on what I would call legacy virtues, the impact you had on others, the stories that you brought to life by being part of someone else's story, and what people will be saying about you after you have long gone from this planet.
Speaking of stories, then I guess, what's one that you could share with us on your journey that's maybe, you know, the more difficult times or times when you had to overcome a certain situation?
I think the toughest moment of my life was when I was 17, Kirsty. I was asked to go to the headmaster's office at school, which, as you know, for anybody being called to the headmaster's office, it's typically not for good reasons. It's more often to be told off and potentially put into suspension if you've been involved in activity which you shouldn't have been involved in. But it was a time in which I wished that was the case. I wish it was that reason. But in actual fact, it was because they told me my mum had slipped into a coma. She had a tragic accident. And so my dad and my brother were outside the school in a car waiting to take me to the hospital. And so we were there little over an hour later by her bedside. And just a few days later, before her 50th birthday, she passed. And so while we could have been celebrating her 50th birthday, we were actually preparing arrangements for her funeral. And you also have to remember at that time, nobody talked about mental health.
No.
There weren't any resources available for people like myself going through such an experience at the time. And I couldn't share it with anybody because this was still at the time in which society, when you were looking at boys, were all about man up. Pick yourself back up. And there was no space for feelings. I mean, today is very different because there's so many resources, there's tools, there's people you can speak to. But back then it was really tough. And I went further into my shell. As I said, I was very stereotypically Chinese. I was introverted, I was shy, I was hardworking. But I went even more into my shell after that experience. And I didn't feel comfortable talking about it because I knew that if I were to talk about it with friends at school, it would only open up more questions. And I don't think I was ready at that point to answer those questions. And so I went further into my shell, as did my brother to some respects. And it took me a couple of years to be able to comfortably talk about what had happened, but also heed the lessons from it. And so I think, Kirsty, on the back of your question, I think for me that was one of the toughest moments of my life. Just because it took me a while to get over it. I mean, it took me a while to sort of find my feet again. And it's one that really has shaped me into who I am today.
Oh, my goodness. You were so young. It gave me like shivers when you're telling me that because that's just so young to process that. I couldn't even imagine processing it now.
And I think it's exactly what you said there, Kirsty, because it was unexpected. It was so hard to process because I think that mentally, I was already prepared for maybe my grandparents or my great-grandparents because their age, naturally they are going to be the first to pass. But for one of your direct parents to pass so early without seeing you go to college or meet your future wife or see all the things that you've gone on to do, my life just went into a tailspin for a couple of years.
Goodness me, I can only imagine. And I think it's amazing the human that you've become, the man you've become, you know, because you share this wonderful side and you hold this space for so many people despite you kind of not having that opportunity for yourself. And I think it almost comes full circle, doesn't it? And it's really, really special.
Definitely. I mean, when I look back, I think that one of the most beautiful gifts that I have managed to continue from the past of my mum is her empathy. It's the fact that she always wanted to help other people. I mean, her occupation before she became a housewife was in the nursing industry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she was always about trying to help other people and to be there when no one else would be there. And so in some respects, I think it's been a privilege to continue the work that she's done, albeit in a different medium and capacity, but just to be able to help other people through the work that I get to do.
Well, we definitely see that shine through your work. We 100% see that. So thank you so much. I'd really love to kind of talk about your book now. And anyone who writes a book to me is just incredible because I'm at the minute writing daily emails, but for two reasons. I love long form content. I love connecting with my community, but it's also a test to see if I have daily dedication to write. Mm. And I'm telling you now, some days, and I'm just writing an email, it's hard. So I'd love to know like the process. And for anyone listening who really wants the behind the scenes, like we really want to know, like, let's get super specific. What was it like to write the book?
I'm going to give you some very in-depth behind the scenes, because there was an imagined scenario and then there was reality. So the imagined scenario of writing a book was me sitting in front of a minimalist study with a window to the outdoor park with a cup of tea on my right hand and writing for hours. That was my imagined scenario before I put pen to paper. And then, of course, COVID happened. And my wife and I became parents for the first time when the country went into its first lockdown. My wife's parents being in America, my dad and his partner being in Australia, they were due to travel over to help support us, but of course they couldn't travel. And so we were new parents in April 2020. The country was going through an extreme scenario. And then I get the book deal in June 2020.
Wow.
And then everything I'd imagine, what I just shared just now, went completely out of the window. The reality is I had to adapt every single day to how I could write. Because when you've got a newborn who demands your attention 24/7, you don't know when they're going to cry, when they need you, when they need their nappy changed, when they need you to put them to sleep, when they need feeding. I was literally adapting every single day. So if our child had a good day, I would have a good writing day. If our child didn't have a good day, well, I would just settle with doing some research.
Wow.
And so I had to be kinder to myself, which was a challenge because I never experienced this many distractions when trying to do something as big as a book. And similar to yourself, Kirsty, you know, the longest thing I wrote before this book was a social media caption or a newsletter. So going from that to 65,000 words was literally like jumping into the deep end of a pool if you've never swum before.
Wow.
And so this was a roller coaster of a ride. I mean, it took me from June 2020 to December 2021 for us to be finalized with the written part of the book before we started to look for endorsements. And yeah, I mean, that was a roller coaster ride. Some days I just got completely lost in the book. I didn't know if I wrote this in this chapter already. Have I not written it in another chapter? And so it wasn't until our daughter went to nursery that I started to have more time to focus on it, because then I had a set number of hours each day that I knew she was going to be cared for by other people that I could really plow forward with the writing. But the reality is I literally had to adapt every single day. And now, I'm not going to lie, I'm enjoying the marketing and PR side of it a lot more now I know the writing is done.
Yeah. What happens on the days? So, you know, you've got these few hours and she's at nursery, but you're just not feeling it. Like you've got writer's block. What happens then?
Sure. So for me, I did a few things and I realized that if you're too rigid on just sitting down and writing, you're not really going to help yourself, because sometimes as humans, we just need variety. Mm-hmm. So I would do a couple of things. The first thing I did was when I had those moments of having writer's block or not feeling the motivation or energy to write, I would simply change my environment. So if I couldn't go into public spaces, I would go outside to a park, bring my laptop and do some writing. Things did open up, I just took my laptop, went to some lobbies of some incredibly beautiful hotels and wrote there. So that really helped my mind by changing up the environment. What I did is also on days I didn't feel like writing, I would just dictate. So I would use an app like Otter.ai and I would speak into it and it would capture my thoughts. And then later I could go back to it and then string them together into a more coherent paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final thing I did, which I never experienced before, but I now really love the idea since I've done it, is to collaborate with other authors who are going on the same journey as you. And so when you are going through a particularly bad day or you are having some writer's block, you can say, hey, do you want to jump on Zoom for 2 hours? We will turn the audio off and just for 2 hours, we can just write and see each other on the video writing.
Wow, that's cool.
And that for me, it's like the equivalent of going to a gym class. So you go to a gym class and there's a moment in that class where you feel like giving up, but you don't, because everybody else in that class is still going. And so it had that same effect on me.
That is really, really good advice. And there is, again, we always talk about this. There is so much in community. Just because you work on your own doesn't mean you have to do it all on your own. Does it? No, thank you. I think that's super, super amazing. So what can we expect from the book? I can't wait to read it.
Sure. So I think in essence, the book is about educating the reader on how when we begin to understand how to manage our energy, that is when we start to transform the way we live and work. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about it from that lens is that when I've observed some of the most successful people on this planet, Kirsty, I've noticed that they're not necessarily the fastest or the most intelligent, but they are the best when it comes to managing their energy, because they know that you can't show up as your best self and accomplish your boldest dreams or visions if you wake up feeling exhausted and drained every day. Mm-hmm. If you approach each day feeling drained and exhausted, you're never going to do what it takes to achieve your biggest goals. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I wanted to explore is, first of all, how do we awaken some of the greatest sources of energy that we have within us? How do we rewire and elevate our energetic state, because our energetic state is so crucial to begin to sculpt and shape our reality? How do we protect our energy for what matters most? And more importantly, how do we lead a supercharged life?
Oh my goodness. Tell me all of the ways, please. That's exactly what I need right now. Have you seen a difference in people post-pandemic? Because I know a lot of people are suffering from like extreme fatigue now.
Yeah, I think what I've noticed as people have come out of the pandemic is, well, at least people that I've had conversations with, they're a lot more conscious about how they're using their time. Because I think when we had no choice, but we had to work at home, the lines became blurred between work and play. At least when you're in the office, you know that once I've clocked out of the office at 5, I can switch off and I can just go back home, or I can meet up with some friends for a drink. There was a boundary. But when you're at home and there are no boundaries, because you are the one that sets the boundary, and many of us haven't got used to setting effective boundaries, what happens is that work just consumes so much of your week. And so now that we've come out and back into the world again, I'm noticing more people are conscious about how they are choosing to spend their time. But also we are more focused on in-person connection than ever before, because we've missed it. We've missed it for over 2 years.
Absolutely. I found it really, really difficult in terms of, like I say, like I'm a real people person. And I'm not to say that all the time. Like I need to kind of reboot by myself again, you know, and spend time by myself. But that face-to-face connection, that it's like the bits in between, isn't it? So you'll turn up on Zoom for like a meeting or a conversation, but then the coffee afterwards or the conversation in the corridor was all gone. So it was all just so formal and so strict and there was nothing else around it. And I think, yeah, you're so right. People now, people just chat to you on the street, I think. It's amazing.
I'm not going to lie. I absolutely love the fact that the world has opened up, because a lot of my work is speaking. And so when the pandemic hit, of course, all of my speaking had to adapt to virtual.
Yeah.
And virtual speaking isn't the same as speaking to a live audience.
No, it's not.
So now I've started to get the opportunity in recent months to speak to a live audience, engage with people, shake hands, give people hugs. You can't replace that energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my goodness. Your energy is infectious, Simon. Honestly, I feel energized talking to you. So I always like to end the podcast by asking people, what is your one mindset hack you would like to share for anyone who's maybe just starting out on their journey?
Sure. If I had to choose just one mindset hack for you to embrace today, it is to start your journey by thinking about your identity. And here's why. When you know who you want to be, and you see yourself as that identity now, i.e. you are deepening the emotional intensity of that future as if it's happening in the present, everything follows from there. I'll give you an example. Imagine if your health is one area that you want to focus on right now. Instead of focusing on which areas of my health I need to address, start with your identity. Start seeing yourself as an athlete. Right now, from today, I see myself as an athlete. And I guarantee you, the next time you go to do your grocery shopping in the supermarket, your basket will be very different to what it now is, because you're working from that identity. Once you know your identity, once you know the identity you want to build your life around, your choices, habits, and behaviors will naturally flow from there.
That's incredible. I'm going to try that. I'm going to be like running around Sainsbury's like, I'll have like four baskets full of,
totally,
you know,
you're going to see
protein.
Your basket full of like, I don't know what you eat, but fruit and veg and energizing foods that are fresh and not the ice creams or the junk food or the microwave meals. It's going to be very different. And that's what I had to do myself. You know, when I exited employment and into the world of entrepreneurship, I knew that in order to succeed, even though I hadn't made it yet in inverted commas, I had to see myself as an entrepreneur.
Oh,
I am a CEO. I am an entrepreneur. Now, what decisions would I make if I'm already that individual? And that's how we become that, by already seeing ourselves in that position today.
Yeah, I'm going to share something. I've never shared this actually with anybody. But when I feel in a tough decision or working out whether to work with somebody or if something feels right, I refer to myself as CEO Kirsty, like as though someone else is making that decision. Because it just, I don't know why, it just helps me to look at like the bigger picture, not just me in that. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? People are like, okay, cool.
Definitely. But hey, whatever works, isn't it, Kirsty? Yeah, whatever helps us to show up as our best selves and share our value with the world, go with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So where can everybody find you?
Sure. So I am on all the major social platforms, but the two I am most active on is LinkedIn. So search me by typing in Simon Alexander Ong, or on Instagram, in which my handle is at Simon Alexander O.
Amazing. I will share both of those in the show notes. I will also share the link to your book. I'm super, super excited. Honestly, this conversation has been so amazing. So thank you so much, Simon.
Kirsty, thank you so much again for having me on.
Of course. Thank you. Oh my goodness. How incredible was that conversation? Simon is one of those people you just warm to instantly. And he's so, so knowledgeable. I feel so lucky to have been able to have that conversation. So you know what part of the podcast it is now. Time to get really comfortable, really cozy as we delve into this week's mini meditation. So I want you to really just, let's move around a little bit. Maybe you've been seated or you've been laying down. Maybe you've been commuting or walking around, listening to the podcast. I want you just to move the body, stretch out the arms, stretch the legs, roll the shoulders. Feel the energy moving through the body. And I want us to come into a state of alignment by using a breath that's really equilateral with the inhale and the exhale. So as we inhale for four, and exhale for four. Inhale for four, find that rhythm. Exhale for four. Just really take a moment to get into this feeling. Inhale. How amazing does that feel? Keep breathing, breathing. And just take a moment to acknowledge what every single part of the body is feeling. Begin to notice if you hold any resistance. Breathing slowly. Find that rhythm of the breath. slowly breathing, breathing in and breathing out, gently releasing, inhaling for four, exhaling for four. Inhale. Exhale. And begin to notice how the mind is feeling. Where's the mind going? How do you feel? How does the body feel? How is your energy today? Accepting where we are and how we feel. Gently opening the eyes. Thank you so much for being here, and I will see you again next week.